Talk about a dynamo. Cam Choan is the first woman of color to lead a large international school organization. Cam is the executive director of the Educational Collaborative for International Schools, or ECIS. She's a thought partner and fierce advocate for students and for improving education through increased attention to child protection, DEIJ, middle leader training, and amplifying student voices. A skilled communicator and collaborator, Cam helped us to think way outside the box about the heights to which education can aspire. Our guiding question was, what does the ECIS organization do, and how can educators access its services? But Cam went well beyond the answer. I think I also speak for David when I say that we could have chatted with her for hours. Cam covered many topics, including ECIS started off by supporting schools in Europe, but has now expanded to schools around the world. ECIS's professional learning opportunities and outreach have grown tenfold in the past 4 years. Inclusion is at the core of Cam's work, working with other thought partners to support learning. Special interest groups like PE, math, and library connect via ECIS to share best practices. The mission of ECIS is to make the world a better place while preparing tomorrow's leaders to do the same. Child protection and DEIJ are key PD programs. ECIS has middle leader training offerings. ECIS aims to approach recruiting with new eyes, questioning previous practices by bringing in more diversity of hires, including local educators. And ECIS seeks to bring in student voices. Some trends Cam identified include helping school communities with well-being and balance, the growth of AI and how to bring in ethics when approaching it, and ongoing work with curriculum. This show was recorded on January 9th, 2024. We hope you enjoy our discussion with the intriguing, exciting Cam Choan.
All right, let's get a podcast going here. Before we went on mic, I think we might have a theme of cold weather and ice, as Audrey was telling me that, Cam. So first, welcome to the show, and we're very excited that you're here with us. Are you in a place that's having cold and ice going on? So where in the world are you?
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you both for inviting me. So I'm in London. So it's not as cold. When I read what had happened with Audrey, where she was stuck with snow and things. Yeah. We're at about 10 degrees here today, so it's not too bad, although it's been very, very windy.
Oh, my gosh. I'm in Southeast Asia enjoying wonderful weather, and I'm not going to rub it into the two of you.
Thank you.
But I wish you well. Spring is right around the corner, right? Maybe London is going to be a little bit longer. We'll see. So thanks for coming on the show.
Well, in London and the UK, we're very lucky because the seasons are just wonderful. And it's nice to have all those changes.
Yes, definitely. So why don't we jump to our Going Global story? Do you have one to share with us?
Yes, I certainly do. So ECIS was founded as a regional organization for Western Europe. But we have now gone global. So we now have members in 86 countries, and that continues to grow. And actually, one of the things that launched us into that really big growth was COVID, being able to reach audiences absolutely everywhere. I was also very aware of, if in international schools we've got cutting edge learning going on, how do we share it with schools in Bangladesh and Botswana? And isn't it wonderful that we can do that now through being on Zoom, through being online? So we at ECIS are really excited about the fact we've gone global and we continue to grow that. Last year, we were in Thailand where we trained over 1,000 teachers. And this September, just gone, we were in India where, again, we trained about 1,000 teachers over a four-day period. So we're really excited about being global and reaching as many wonderful educators as we possibly can to make those changes in classrooms.
I love it. It's a Going Global story about an organization. What a fabulous angle. Thank you for that. You did mention before we got on the mic that your numbers have increased. Could you just share those stats again with us for a sec, please?
Yes, certainly. So there's a couple of things about ECIS that I'd like to tell you. So I'm the first person of colour to be an executive director for any international schools organisation globally. For me, inclusion is absolutely at the core of everything that I believe. And I really wanted to move us away from being a service provider for premium schools. I wanted to be inclusive of everyone. So we moved from 2019-2020. We had 759 educators attend professional development with us. And the year that's just finished, we had 7,380. And I know these numbers because I used to be a maths lecturer and I love a bit of maths and remembering numbers, just in case people are wondering why I know such specific numbers. So we've grown tenfold in about 4 years. And we're so excited that so many people from countries that didn't engage with ECIS are now engaging and finding that work useful again to take to learners, to change the world, to improve where we are.
Wow, that is some fantastic growth. Congratulations to you and congratulations for being the first person of color to lead a large international organization like this. I am so excited about the direction that we're going with DEIJ and good for you leading the charge. I love it. So let's jump in with our guiding question. What does the ECIS organization do and how can educators access its services? And we're not going to answer that broad question. We'll answer it through a series of sub-questions, of which the first is, what do those new to international education and veterans need to know about your organization? And maybe you can bring in the mission and a bit of the history to paint the broader picture.
Certainly. So we were considered thought leaders before, but I really believe that we're thought partners, providing professional development to lots of teachers. And also at the centre of everything that we do is inclusion. All children and all teachers need to have a sense of belonging and safety in their schools. Otherwise, learning can never be what it should be. And that's really a very strong part of ECIS's mission. You know, we're here to stand alongside you, serve the community, and how can we help you thrive? So last year we delivered 45 free trainings. And not only do we deliver free webinars, as long as you register and if you can't attend, we'll send you the recording anyway. We want to reach as many people as possible. And there's also an archive again, which people anywhere in the world can access and then watch the recordings that are of interest to them. And ECIS support about 16 special interest groups. So we have the biggest libraries conference, we have a PE conference, and actually in a few weeks, we're having the multilingual conference here in London. So all those people come together to share best practice, to share what's working for them. And that's a global community. And as teachers, we love nothing more than sharing our best practice. What works for you? What can I learn from you? I know as a maths lecturer, that was really important to me.
Fantastic. And I happen to know that the ECIS PE group is very active, at least on Facebook, because I'm part of it as a former PE teacher. So could you tell us a little bit more about what is ECIS's mission more specifically and a little bit of the history?
Certainly. So ECIS was founded in 1965. So we were one of the first international organizations that was founded for international schools. And since then, we've really worked tirelessly. And our mission remains the same. How can we make the world a better place? How can we, through education, improve everything that's going on in the world? And we always keep that really at the forefront of everything we do. So let me give you a little example of that. Our leadership conference that'll be in April this year, we have got Cambridge University coming in to talk about positive peace in schools. You know, the things that are going on in the world today that we're completely horrified about. And I think about this all the time. How can we change that? We can change that by the way that we educate students. And that positive peace curriculum, I hope, will change things for a lot of schools and for a lot of future leaders, because that's what we're educating in schools. They're people who are going to run the world. And also fee-paying schools 7% of children in the world go to fee-paying schools, but they have 70% of the top jobs in the world. So it's a really big responsibility.
My goodness, that really is. Now, ECIS stands for something different than it did before. Back in the day when I was starting, I believe it was the European Council of International Schools, and it's now the
Educational Collaborative for International Schools. So when we were first founded, we also did accreditation and we did recruitment. And then some years ago, CIS took the recruitment piece and the accreditation piece. And we remained very committed to that professional development piece.
So there are two bodies. One is ECIS and one is CIS, and they're completely separate.
Yes, they're completely separate. And as I mentioned before, we've now got members in over 80 countries. So we couldn't call ourselves European. And also, how can we say that we're inclusive if we're not going to let people access child protection training, all the professional development they need, unless they're in Europe? That doesn't work for me.
100%. You go, girl.
So on a quick side note, you're mentioning of multilingual learners, and I'm seeing that terminology come up more and more. And I know in the past we've had EFL, ESL. Could you define that a little bit more as we're using that terminology?
So multilingual learners, I'm going to go back a little bit and tell you a bit of a story. I grew up in the 1970s. My dad came from India and he was a bus driver in Wolverhampton. So I went to school at the age of 5, not speaking any English at all. I went to school speaking just my home language. I'm a September child and nobody had considered sending me to nursery. So I went into full-time school at 5 and I couldn't speak any English. And at that time, there was no support for learners like me. So you just caught up. You just caught up in your own time. But now with multilingualism, what we're doing is we're really valuing home languages, teaching those languages. So one of our schools in London, International School of London, they've got 56 different languages being spoken by the children in their school, but they also have 56 teachers that can speak those languages. So no child is left out like me. I had no sense of belonging in my school. I couldn't speak to anyone apart from the children that had come from families like my own that were from immigrant backgrounds. So that multilingual piece is a really important piece of DEIJ. And I think people forget that. Language is at the core of all the work that we do.
That does expand one's perspective in thinking not just as how we're going to put kids into a category, but to say, how do we understand these children and where they're coming from and honor who they are and their customs and their cultures? That is very helpful because I'm hearing that term more and more. All right, well, let's look a little bit more into some of your other initiatives. So it's very clear that you're doing a lot of professional development or a lot of professional learning opportunities. What are some other initiatives and programs that you're doing that are helping you fulfill your mission?
Okay, so we're founded members of the Child Protection Task Force, which was founded some years ago after there was a terrible case here with Bill Vahey. So we're very committed to child protection. We work very closely with ICMEC and we provide, again, lots of free resources around free child protection workshops. We've also got an ICMEC education portal where people can, again, download all the things they need to make sure children are safe in their schools. So child protection is one of our pillars at ECIS. We also, about 18 months ago now, founded the International Schools Anti-Discrimination Task Force with the IB, International School of Geneva and ALOC. Because again, children have to feel safe and that sense of belonging. These are two really big pieces of work we've done recently. And since the inception of DEIJ trainings at ECIS, over 5,000 people over the 3 or 4 years have attended trainings with ECIS. So that continues to grow. And also we do a very different training. We go to schools and we will say, what is it that we can help you with? We want to create safe spaces where people don't feel if they say the wrong thing, someone's going to call them out. We want to be with them on that journey and sort of say, well, how can we rephrase that? How do you think that's making other people feel? So my commitment really is to learning journeys. What I don't believe in is silver bullet PD. When you bring in someone to do some PD, they do a great show and it's all singing and dancing. And then at the end of the day, you're left with four post-it notes. I want to be on a learning journey. And I was a teacher and I went to lots of professional development. And I used to think, why am I here? I should have bought my books. I could have marked them while I was listening to this person. It's really important for me to use educators' time properly. So whenever they go back from an ECIS training, they can think, right, on Monday, I can change that and I'll just do that little thing in my classroom, which will be really positive, hopefully, for people. When I was lecturing, I worked with a cabinet office in the UK on the nudge theory and how we can apply that in classrooms just to help learners with their outcomes.
Yeah, I can relate. I used to take my knitting to some of those sessions because I could at least still listen, but I didn't feel, as you say, unproductive, very frustrating.
Yeah.
One size fits all. And so good for you tailoring things. Could you tell us a little bit more about your efforts to support child safeguarding in particular?
Yes, certainly. So we work very closely with all the organisations like CIS, CISA, NISA. We all work collaboratively on that, about how can we develop that and continue to develop that. And the task force meets regularly to create new resources, to think of new ways. Because sadly for us, whatever we think of, the criminals are two steps ahead of us. They find that gap. They're already thinking about how they can get through those gaps. So it's really ongoing work. And actually, it's really, really scary. So we always bring ICBEC to the leadership conference. So every leader in every school at an ECIS conference knows this is really their responsibility and they've got to be aware of it all the time. Because it's very easy sometimes to have your blinkers on and say, this isn't an issue in my school. This is an issue in every school. And also really simple things. If you post a picture of a child in a school uniform, and if a perpetrator likes that child, within three clicks, they can find out where that child is at school and then go and watch them in that school from the gate or from the fence. So we're very committed to that piece of our work. And we always will be.
So I was wondering about that at a couple of my schools, and I think probably a lot of schools that are really supporting their social networking and putting images up and video in a lot of ways to say, parents, look what's happening at our school. But there have been times where I would look at some of these images going up of children and it just didn't seem like a great idea in certain circumstances. Do you all have like a handbook or something that you offer that helps them process and think about what they're putting up on the internet, for example?
Yeah, we do in the education portal. It's all about awareness. So we're one of the only organizations as well that offers child protection training in Arabic. We offer it in China-specific law, in India-specific law, and Spanish and Mandarin. So we offer it in different languages. And also, there's so many cultural nuances. You know, when we deliver it in Arabic, there's certain words we just cannot use. When we deliver it in India, it's a very different thing. Every cultural nuance is different. So we have to keep thinking about it and developing it. You know, one in five people now in the world is Indian. So actually developing that child protection for India was really important to me. And we worked with partners in India to make sure it was specific to India law, how it's reported in India, because every country also varies about how things are reported. So it's that whole awareness piece. Let's really think about what we're doing and what we're exposing children to when we're even putting images up of them.
So that's a kind of a good segue. If you're going to have programs and education opportunities, you need leadership. And so one of the things I've picked up from going through your website is your middle leader program. Could you tell us more about that?
Absolutely. I'd be so happy to talk to you about that. So we have one of the best facilitators in the world called Nancy Squicciarini, who delivers and leads very much on our middle leader courses. So you guys have been in schools and we've talked a little bit about this. So I always think your influencer in the school is not your head of school. Your influencer in your school is like your head of English. Other people are influencers. So these courses are for those people. I know that one day I was a maths teacher and then the next day I was head of maths. One day they were my peers and the next day I was their manager. How do we move from those relationships? How do we then build and lead those teams? How do we have those difficult conversations? So what we do is we provide those middle leaders with all that toolkit they need. And again, it's an ongoing training. It's a certificate. So I think there's 8 or 9 workshops. And then we also offer a cafe. So you can keep coming back and saying, you know, in the training, you said I could do that thing and it's not working that well for me. How can I make it work better? And also it connects all the middle leaders. So they go, oh my goodness, that happened to me. And this is how I dealt with it. You know, it's that ongoing support, which is so valuable. Nobody wants to be just talked out at a course. They want to feel like they're taking things away, they're implementing them. Then they're coming back with that group and reflecting. So the middle leader course is so important to us.
It's interesting. One of my sons is in the business world, and whenever he hears me talking about education, he just doesn't understand it very well, even though he went through it as a student. When it comes to helping people being managers and leaders, and he says, how did these people learn how to do that? Because they're studying math in university, they're studying history. And it's just the same. We've had some folks come on and talk about the Board of Trustees and offering training services for them. So in a lot of ways, what I'm picking up here is we've taken a lot for granted. And now organizations like ECIS, you're stepping in to say, here are the steps to help you do a better job with these programs. For example, if you want people to become assistant principals, eventually heads of school, you have to help them along the way to learn how to work even better with their fellow teachers and have the skill set, and I love that term, toolkit, to do their job as they move into the leadership program. So that's wonderful.
Yeah. I think as well, you know, leadership has really changed. I think leadership was seen very differently, but I think leadership now is very human. It's about kindness and it's about giving the people that you lead some autonomy and that trust and that making it safe to make mistakes. So I think leadership is very different. And I think we need to always be looking at that continuum of learning. I always call myself a lifelong learner.
I love it. And it's so human to think about all these interactions and the importance of developing leaders who are empathetic and understand that leadership is service and so on. And I really love how you were sort of alluding to, you know, what we used to call just-in-time learning. When you need it, there it is. And having that sense of community. So fabulous work. I love it. Let's pivot a little bit into the topic of recruiting, because that is a big one that all of our listeners are always wanting to know more about. So maybe you could share a few tips and strategies for people going on the recruiting trail, timelines, fairs, skill sets, character strengths, etc.
So actually, this Saturday, I was at the Search Recruitment Fair here in London. And I found it fascinating. Apparently, there was between 300 to 400 people looking for jobs, and there was 100 schools there. And some of the schools were looking for up to 9 people. So when I was head of maths, I needed 27 maths teachers. So that's a lot of maths teachers. And good maths teachers are like gold dust. And what would happen is we'd put an ad out, the same people had applied, the same, you know, and it's like, how can we do things differently? We can't keep doing things the same and expecting different results. And having come from immigrant parents, I do have a really entrepreneurial little streak running through me. So when I was looking for maths teachers and I couldn't find them, I thought, right, we need to do this differently. So one of my greatest maths teachers was a gentleman who taught. He was an engineer, had an engineering degree, and he was a rugby coach. And I knew he always wanted to be a teacher. So what I did was I brought him into our classrooms and put him in with my grade one teacher, James. I felt like teacher training was great. You know, he learnt the theory of how it all works. But I wanted him to see what happens with low-level disruption in the classroom. What happens when someone pulls their phone out? So every Monday morning at 9 o'clock, he went into James's maths class and learnt the magic of being a teacher. You know, I always say teachers are performers. So he learnt all those little things that you have to do to keep switching up, to changing things, alongside his teacher training degree. And actually, he's just about to become head of maths at a local prep school here in London. So let's think about things differently. We also have worked with TES to launch the International PGCE. Because teachers in Thailand, all those people that want something that will then get them jobs in different areas, the International PGCE is awarded from the University of London. That really changes chances. Let's look in our communities, think about who really wants to be a teacher. Who can we put in with James who'll learn that trade and then they do their teaching course? And, you know, let's create some new teachers. We can't keep moving the same people around. You know, let's think about things differently. What about students, returning students who want to work in the school? My son always says, so he's 24 and he's just gone off to work in finance. We all like maths in the family. So he says when he retires, he's going to go back to his senior school and be a maths teacher. Isn't that great? Shouldn't we make that a bit of a thing? You know, when you're done with your career that you wanted to do, come back, be a maths teacher, or come back, be an English teacher. All the things we love. You know, and I think life is wonderful if it's guided by what we love instead of what we think that we should be doing to put in our bank accounts.
Could you speak a little bit more to not just ECS, but other efforts to bring in people to be teachers from countries that didn't have a chance previously to work in international schools? We have an interview where the teacher was talking about mainly these 5 passports that so many schools are looking for in their hires. So I'm wondering what efforts are taking place to find students in universities and countries from all over the world to say, hey, why don't you come on and be an international teacher, just like the program you were talking about using Thailand as an example?
Yes, so I think that's a great question, David. COVID taught us that we can't move around the world as easily as we used to be able to. So lots of schools did look in country. But sadly, we always forget very quickly. Once things change back, we just think, oh, we can go to the search fair in London. It's about looking on your doorstep, looking in your own communities, who those people are. And also, wouldn't that representation be amazing for those schools? When international schools were first founded, 70% were expat, 30%, 20% might be local. Well, we all know that's changed. I never, ever had a teacher of colour. Until I was 21, I never came across a teacher of colour. And actually, I should have always been a teacher, but because I never had that representation, no Indian family with children growing up in the 1970s or 80s thought their children could be teachers. So wouldn't that representation be great as well for girls sitting in classes and seeing people in their own country being in those jobs and then progressing to be women leaders too?
I know there are efforts that are going on from our other interviews, but, and I have to be blunt on this one, there's prejudice in so many countries that parents want a certain person to be teaching their kids. You know, they've got an image of, I want that teacher from Britain, I want that American, I want that Canadian, I don't want that local teacher. So that's another area, and I wonder how organizations, I guess, are working with schools in outreach to help educate the parents to change their perspectives.
Yeah. So I think that behavior has to be challenged. So just in case I didn't mention earlier, I am a bit of an activist. So I think that behavior has to be challenged. So during lockdown, this school in Kuwait hired lots of people locally. And then one of the parents came up to the head quite recently, perhaps about a year ago, and said, oh, isn't it time to get the British teachers and the American teachers back now that COVID's over? And he turned around to the parent and he said, do you know, actually, this is working really well. The students are all flourishing. The school is flourishing. And we're not going to go that route. And I hope it's still the right place for your child. And nothing happened. But the problem is, we sometimes use it as excuses. We say, oh, well, the parents want this. And I've had this discussion so many times. In many ways, the students can go home and talk to their parents. That's how you change them. They say, actually, you know what? Cam taught me maths today and she's just like me. I could be a maths teacher, opposed to somebody completely different coming in, where we then create just a window where they can see into that world, but they don't think they're in that world. So it's about challenging that behavior and having the intent. We've got to have the intent. We shouldn't make excuses. Have that intent and say, this is the way we're going to go. And really, it'll be great for all of us as a community. And then continue on that path.
I appreciate the perspectives that you're bringing into ECIS that are going out through your organization. What are other lessons that you've learned during your days at ECIS?
Well, I've been really excited to answer that question. What have I learned? So I love education, and it's made me realize that educators are just the best people in the world. You know, it's such a vocation, isn't it? And isn't it wonderful? Every place I go, I will learn something from someone I meet there, whether it's a student, a teaching assistant, a teacher, or indeed a leader. It's having that open-mindedness. And ECIS has taught me so much about service to others, about how we're all so driven about that service to others. So I am a Sikh. I'm a practicing Sikh. So for me, the essence of life is service to others. And how do we then make the children in our classrooms realize that their lives will be far greater with a service to others, not by the way they look on Instagram? So I feel really privileged and blessed to work at ECIS, to be connected with educators all over the world and students. Listening to student voice as well, that's another thing at ECIS that I've learned. We need to move away from that tell model and move to listen.
That's fantastic. I really like how you seek to shake things up and do things differently and include as many stakeholders as possible and really develop a system that is collaborative. So right in the title of your organization is fantastic. Looking beyond current events and initiatives, what trends and topics do you see on the horizon that school leaders are discussing?
So I think obviously the biggest one for everyone at the moment is artificial intelligence. This keeps me awake at night because I think the ethics is so far behind where the thing is developing. If you look at the biases are far greater when they're being generated through artificial intelligence. There's representational harms and stereotypes are just far more increased. And actually, we're having a workshop, our first workshop that's open to students and to educators about AI and the ethics, because the ethics is a really big piece. And all the people that are really running AI, like the Elon Musks of the world, it's such a narrow view. So I'm very troubled by artificial intelligence, and I know many heads are. And also there's the understanding piece of it. As soon as we think we know what it's doing, it's already moved on. And I think with the global events going on, everyone is worried about positive peace. I was recently at a conference in India at TASI, and the gentleman that was speaking there said, we need to move away from debating. And the week before, I'd been at the Blair Institute in London, who were doing resources on respectful discussions. And it was like a light bulb moment. I thought, why are we still debating in 2023? Because we both have our points, but one person will win. So isn't respectful discussion the way we should go forward? And would we be in a better place if we could get some of our world leaders at the moment to be doing a bit more respectful discussion? So I think for most heads, those are the two things. AI is huge. Thinking about the curriculum for the future and thinking about what learners need.
Yes, we had John Micton and Dan Taylor on, and John was really hitting home on the topic of AI and representation, especially, I guess, with video and then with so many world elections taking place this year, what opposing sides can create that won't be true, but to drive wedges between people and make them scared. It's such a huge topic, and we're going to be living it for the next many months. And let's hope that we're going to be good learners and say, just as you were saying, we need to look at what our values are and what's the ethical side of using this tool. And just like you were saying earlier, it's always going to be ahead of us. How can we get in front of it? So I thank you for sharing that. So how are your schools preparing for these trends?
So they seek expert partners, and sometimes they'll come to us and we'll connect them with those expert partners. Because as well, schools can't be experts in everything, and sometimes you need to bring in outside people for people to listen. And learning journeys. You never learn anything anymore. You've got to keep learning it. I say it with DEIJ work. It's a learning journey. And all this stuff with AI is a learning journey. The other things that schools are all really working on at the moment is well-being, balance. And again, we need to be able to do that so that the children in our schools can see how important balance is in life. So they're really important things, but most schools seek expert partners, or they develop, which I really love, expertise and sort of professional learning communities within the school's surrounding area. You know, that's something we've been working on with schools. So schools in areas that are near each other will come together. And we're sort of trying to move away from the big conferences. So I say to schools, right, we'll come and do something. What's really important to you? And then they'll invite in other schools that are in the region that are on that same path. It's much more effective, not to mention inclusive, if you can all go somewhere locally rather than flying to Germany and all those places, because some schools just can't do that.
I really appreciate, again, your inclusivity and the way you seek collaboration all the time. I'm just going to comment that one trend that I hope will expand. I was reading, I think it was maybe ISS Newslinks, and they were talking about some awards that had been given. And one of them was to the first school that did a entirely student-led conference, and it was the school in Ghana, and they did MUN for their region. And I thought, that's fantastic. And you've just gotten me thinking that I can imagine that ECIS would jump all over that idea as well and think about, wow, how can we work alongside students and get the whole leadership thing going at younger and younger ages. So I hope that's another trend, and I'm just putting that out there. So what about the future of ECIS? Have you thought, I'm sure you have, just from meeting you in this discussion. Tell us a bit more what you've got planned.
So the student work is really important to us. But like I said, we can't all be experts in everything. So we'll work with schools because they've got the facility, they've got the students. We'll work with schools on how we can do that. But for me, it's continuing to serve and support that community, listening and being a thought partner for them. Sometimes middle leaders or school heads will just call us because they want to be able to talk to someone and have that safe space. We have these closed groups of heads where they can just come together and say, you know, I just don't know what to do about this. Being a leader is also really lonely sometimes because people expect you to have all the answers or to be able to sort things out. But actually, we just need those safe spaces sometimes. But ECIS will continue to look after our communities. Relationships are so important to us, and that's what we're based on. We'd rather have a smaller community, but they all feel like they're getting what they need.
You've shared so much helpful information and several themes running through what you've shared. And so as we wrap things up, is there anything else you would like to share with the audience?
One of the things I love, I'm a bibliophile, I love books, and I may well, when I retire, become a librarian. I always visit the library in every school I go to. Read things all the time. I recently read a wonderful book that one of my children suggested called The Go-Giver. And, you know, in a world where sometimes we're seeing people like Bezos and Elon Musk who are all about what can they take for themselves, actually, let's explore the theme of giving. Let's go and give and see what comes back. Wouldn't that be a different world? So read as often as you can. I have books in my bag all the time, and I love open-mindedness, always being open to ideas and perspective of others. As globalization increases, we need to understand other people's cultural nuances and have that empathy and understanding. I think that's it really from me.
Well, it's been wonderful, and I love your seek to understand and the idea that we're going to reach out and form communities, and we need to find places where we can be open with one another and show our frailties and show our times when we're struggling and the very human side of being human. It sounds so crazy to say that, but we live in a world where everything's going so quickly and there's so many forces of divisiveness out there. So I really appreciate your leadership and how it expands out through all the different schools you're helping. So how might people follow you and what you're doing? Is there social networking, LinkedIn, something like that?
Yeah. So our biggest social network is LinkedIn. So you can follow ECIS and you can follow me. I did remove us from what used to be Twitter because it didn't align with our integrity and our morals. So my staff had spent so long, my team, building up followers on Twitter, but it didn't stand for what we represented. So the only social media platform we're really on is LinkedIn. And also visit our website on the events page. Anybody can attend those free events, register, we'll send you a recording or look at the archives, especially if you're looking for something around child protection, special interest groups. We work with early childhood. So there's something for everyone there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Cam. I really have enjoyed this conversation and I love your vibe of inclusivity, collaboration, your thoughtfulness, and particularly how you think outside the box, you know, calling yourself an entrepreneur and an activist. And I just appreciate so much. And we know how busy you are because it's taken us several attempts to get together. So super appreciating the time that you've given to us and your thoughtfulness. Thank you so much.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you both for being patient. It's great to meet you both. Hope our paths cross again soon.
Hope so. Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you for joining us today on Educators Going Global.
You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all the other usual suspects.
Please subscribe, like us, and leave a review on Apple and Spotify, and let your teaching friends know about us so we can grow our community.
Please reach out at educatorsgoingglobal@gmail.com and join our Facebook group, Educators Going Global, if you have ideas, comments, or wish to share a Going Global story of your own.
You can also find us on Instagram at Educators Going Global.
Please visit our website as well, www.educatorsgoingglobal.com. All our podcast episodes are on there by topic, along with blog posts, Going Global stories, and our ever-growing resource library. For now, this is Audrey
and David
inviting you to travel,
teach,
and connect with us.